Hi. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of Siemens Energy India Limited, it's my pleasure to welcome you all to our very first analyst and investor meet as an independent listed entity. I am Radhika Arora, Head of Investor Relations, and it's wonderful to see so many familiar faces, many of whom I've already interacted with over the last few years. I know it's been a long wait for this moment, and we truly appreciate your patience and continued engagement. Today marks a significant milestone, not just for Siemens Energy India, but for the entire energy sector in India. With the country's renewed focus on energy transformation and sustainability, there could not be a more exciting time to introduce you to Siemens Energy India Limited, a company built on a legacy of innovation, now charting its own course as a pure-play energy leader. As a starting point, we would love to start with a video to have you all a glimpse of our listing ceremony.
We are committed to creating sustainable value and maintaining the highest standards of corporate governance.
Looking ahead, one thing is clear. Zaire is not just listed on the stock exchange, it's listed in the future of energy's energy story.
Fully aligned with the vision of the country, making it for India, making it for the world.
A very beautiful ceremony that symbolizes the strengthening of this incredible and meaningful partnership and this milestone, of course.
Now I'd like to introduce our management team, Mr. Guilherme Mendonça, our Chief Executive Officer, who brings a wealth of experience in driving energy solutions for a sustainable future. He's on my right. And Harish Shekhar, our CFO, whose deep financial expertise and vision will be instrumental as we embark on this new journey. Both Guilherme and Harish would share their perspectives and answer your questions. Just briefly, the agenda for today. We will begin with a presentation by our CEO, who will outline our vision, business overview, strategy, and the opportunities ahead for Siemens Energy India. This will be followed by a financial overview from our CFO, who will walk you through the performance and KPIs. After the presentation, we will open the floor for a Q&A session. And finally, we will invite you for maybe, you know, join us for a networking session and some tea and coffee outside. Before we begin, I would like to draw your attention to the disclaimer on the slide deck. By participating in today's session, we take it as read that you have reviewed and acknowledged the disclaimer. Thank you once again for joining us on this occasion. We look forward to an engaging and insightful session together. With that, I would like to invite Guilherme and Harish on stage. And Guilherme to start his presentation, please.
So, very good morning from my side. It's a big pleasure to have all of you today with us and have the chance to introduce Siemens Energy India Limited in more details. We are more or less 6 months on the road after the listing, and we are so proud of this moment when we got listed on the 19th of June. And now today we have the opportunity to share with you a little bit about our company and about our business and how we're going forward. So I will go through the presentation together with Harish, our CFO, going through main 4 blocks. So first I will do an introduction of Siemens Energy as a whole and the company. Then we boil down to Siemens Energy India as we are operating this country. Harish will talk to you about the financial performance. And then at the end, we take a little bit look on the future, how we play and how we see forward the energy market in this country. So getting started right away, so you know, I don't need to tell you the journey that this country is going through. So it's an amazing journey that India is developing, looking forward to be a developed nation in 2047, with so many things happening around. And that these are realities that are not only wishful thinking, we really see things happening, right? So we see just the growth of the GDP of the last quarter at 80.2%. It's simply amazing how we see a country growing amid such a turbulent world. And when we look forward, we see this growth happening consistently. And of course, when we have such country growth, the energy sector also goes through a dramatic transformation, because there is no GDP growth, there is no country development if you do not have a strong energy sector that underpins all the development. You can try to figure out what vertical, what kind of business, what kind of sector of the society that cannot depend on the energy. Everything depends on the energy. And of course, as we go, the energy sector will go along. And if I put this in some KPIs, India today has electricity per capita consumption that is only 1/3 of the global consumption. In a population of 1.5 billion people, 1/3 of the consumption just give us a glimpse how much energy this country will need and how much is the growth forward to fulfill the aspirations of this great nation. And of course, do go in this direction of developing the country and support with the needed energy. India will see in the next years to come, as is by the government plan, kind of doubling the entire electricity infrastructure. We will come to that in more details, but just to put this in perspective, when we say going to 500 gigawatts of power to 1,000 gigawatts of power, what is planned in the growth of the installed power generation, it means to install in India in the next years to come, 2 Germanys. So it means that we have to, as a society and as an industry, to put 2 Germanys in 7 to 10 years. It's a massive, you know, growth that we have to do to let this country go forward. But then comes, you know, a very important question that's quite a dilemma. How can we grow the energy sector that's necessary for the growth and for the well-being of our society? And how can we at the same time protect our climate? How can we do this in a sustainable way? Because it's not only about putting more gigawatts of power, that's also nice and important, but it's important to do this in a mindful way that does not damage the climate and do not make things worse as they already are. And then exactly where Siemens Energy comes in, because we as a company, we are exactly supporting our customers, the countries where we operate with our long time experience. We are, as you know, a centenary company. We are in this business as energy for more than 150 years globally. And in India, we are for more than 100 years in this country doing power, supporting the development of the energy sector. And of course, we are in our first 6 months as a listed company in the country. And we are very happy, you know, to keep this forward and helping the development of India.
The mission of our company globally is to energize the society in a very broad way. And it is exactly what we do. And when we energize the society, we support our customers on their own energy transition journey, how our customers can come from what they have to what they need on a sustainable way with our technology, with our innovations, turning ideas into reality. So this is our very much mission to help our customers and our society to go navigate through the energy transition, implementing, you know, all the gigawatts that are not necessary, at the same time contributing for the sustainability of the planet. If I move forward about our company now and coming to our history in this country. So as I have said, we are in India for more than 100 years operating over here. And these are many milestones that I could spend probably, you know, a long time explain you what we have been doing here. But actually, I will just pick up some of them that I think that are super relevant to give you an idea of Siemens Energy, or the energy business of Siemens that became Siemens Energy recently. So our story, our history starts back in 1910, our first project that we can say, where we provided turbo generators for Tata Iron Steel Power Plant. So we started in this country in the generation side, where we supported, you know, a very fundamental industry for the development of the country on the steel space. In 1922, Siemens as a company was founded in India, because in that time, 1910, we were still operating as an international company. But in 22, then the company started not really exist as a legal entity in the country, based out of Calcutta. In 2003, we did a very emblematic project. So it's more or less more than 20 years when we implemented our first HVDC line. So Siemens Energy is a leader and a pioneer on the HVDC, starting this country with the first line more than 20 years ago. And as we went through our history, then of course we start bringing more value time to time, you know, less importing, more localization. And then you see some factories that we have put in the country. 2006, next year we will complete 20 years of our transformer factory in Kalwa, in Thane, nearby Mumbai. You might know that. And we are just expanding this factory. We are doubling the capacity of the factory. It's also made public time ago. In 2023, we had our steam turbine in Vadodara, where we do industrial steam turbines, where we celebrate a very emblematic moment when we achieved 1,500 turbines delivered out of this factory. Actually, as we talk, this was 23. We are reaching the 2,000 turbines as we talk right now. So it's a very, very, good factory and with a very good contribution for the industrial sector in India. And finally, as we have seen in the video, 2025, June 19, we were proud to list the company and bring Siemens Energy India to life in this country and take this from there forward. When we talk about Siemens Energy in India, so we are, as our global company Siemens Energy, we are pure play on the energy sector. So we are a company that only focus on the power sector. And differently from other competitors, Siemens Energy is a company that goes through the entire value chain, right? We have many competitors, of course, but we see competitors more in a kind of niche player. So one is in wind, another one is transmission, another one is, you know, thermal power generation. Siemens Energy is a unique company that goes across the complete power generation, transmission, of course, also consumption on the industrial side. You can see in the slide that we have a focus on the power generation with the low emission, zero emission generation. We are also acting in the industrial space where we bring, of course, captive power generation for the industry, but also a lot of energy efficiency solutions to our customers. And once this power is generated, of course, we have to bring this down to the consumption. And we have a very strong and powerful transmission sector where we cover the entire portfolio from AC, DC, substations, products, services, digital, cybersecurity, you name it. So we are completely across the border in the power transmission. With this portfolio, we cover all the verticals. So we are very strong in the power utilities, of course, but also in the industrial space, metal, cement, oil and gas, sugar and ethanol, pulp and paper, the, you know, emerging data center sector where we, of course, supplying our solutions over there, and also in the transportation, the railways. So we cover with our portfolio the entire energy sector. When we look at our company in India and also, you know, related to our global one, we are very strong company based on very strong fundamentals. We are, as you know, said, covering the entire value chain. I will give you more details on our portfolio. We are also very much diversified because we are not focused in a particular vertical. We are in the utilities, industry, infrastructure. So we serve customers across the entire, you know, demand that we have. We have a very large footprint that I will have the opportunity to show to you in a slide that will come soon. But we are very spread across India with a very strong local footprint in manufacturing, services, R&D, sales, and all. We have a resilient business model because we are diversified in terms of customers' verticals. We are diversified in terms of portfolio. We are not just one or another portfolio. And we also have a focus on the domestic market, of course, that's booming, but we are also focusing the exports because India became one global manufacturing hub and the demand, you know, when we de-risk other countries in the world, of course, India is the option number one so that we can bring value chains to the country. And we are also looking very much to the service expansion. And being Siemens Energy India Limited, we are part of the global Siemens Energy Group as well. Of course, due to that, we can access a very broad base of innovation, product development, new portfolios that as soon as they are available, we bring down to the country or we cooperate with our headquarters in Germany to bring new portfolios also out of India where we can support our company growing forward. We have some financials down to the bottom, but I will leave this to Harish to share with you in more details in the financial part. When we look at our portfolio, so we split the company basically into elements. One is the generation. In the generation, we have some main elements over there. We have one that's very important, that's the central power generation. And here we are talking about large gas turbines, right? Gas turbines more for utilities where we generate power for, you know, for feeding the grid. As you know, India is not a country that's strong in gas. So India is a strong import of natural gas. So I think 50% of the gas is actually imported, and the gas that India uses, or the gas that India imports and local produce, but is a small piece, is basically for the domestic consumption and also for the fertilizer. So gas for power generation is not much available. We still have gas turbines here. You see that, you know, 25% of India gas turbines belong to us. But, you know, they are acted more as speakers. But globally, I can tell you that the gas is really booming. Gas was seen in the past as a bridge to the energy transition. You know, we have energy transition thing, the gas will bring us to there. Today, the view has changed fundamentally, and gas is part of the energy transition. Energy transition is about the blending of many energy sources and not just one silver bullet. And gas is one of the key elements how you can combine a stable and reliable and sustainable power system with renewables and gas. So this is how is our vision forward. And we are seeing the growth of gas turbines globally, strongly, especially also driven by the data centers. We have the distributed power generation, where we have gas turbines and steam turbines up to 100 to 100 megawatts. So it's more focused on the oil and gas, pulp and paper, sugar and ethanol, where we have either captive generation of power, or we have, you know, like in the oil and gas sector, customers like ONGC, where we have an extensive fleet of industrial gas turbine feeding the platforms and the exploration of oil and gas. On the industrial steam turbines, we are very much present in the supply of steam for the process industries, like sugar and ethanol, pulp and paper, metals, cement. So this is a very important element over there. And I just shown, you know, that our factory in Vadodara has supplied more than 1,500 turbines so far. In the transformation of the industry, where we are more on the consumption side, we are very much looking to the electrification, automation, digitalization of the industry, aiming to bring more sustainability, decarbonizing the industry. We have solutions, for example, on the waste heat recovery, where we take the flue gases of a process like cement and steel. These are very hot gases that normally goes to the atmosphere. We capture these gases, we bring these gases back to the boiler, we generate new steam, and with this new steam, we generate more power. That brings a very important, you know, additional clean energy to our customers and a very important sustainability measures to them. And finally, we have the green hydrogen. We are the market leaders on the PEM electrolyzer. We are seeing India with a very big push for hydrogen. This is, on our view, kind of more longer shot. We see the movement is still, you know, in development, and we see that hydrogen will peak more forward, maybe 5 years down the line. But of course, we are supporting India with our technology and with our global experience. When we look at the transmission portfolio, as I have said, in the transmission, we are a major player. We are across the entire value chain of the transmission support our customers. We have, you know, 30% of the HVDC capacity in the country with the projects that I have mentioned. And we are also a market leader on the grid stabilization. When we say that India is implementing 500 gigawatts of renewables until 2030, that's a massive amount of renewables. As I said, it's 2 times Germany total capacity. We do need to implement grid stabilization. You might have known what has happened in Spain and Portugal, that the 2 countries were more or less 3 days without energy, a complete blackout, because these countries are very much based on solar and wind, and was missing exactly the grid stabilization, the inertia in the grid, and then some instability drove the country to a blackout. India has been very mindful in build up the renewable with the thermal power plants, but also bring a lot of grid stabilization. Last year, 25 was an important year when we had a very large amount of STATCOM projects. So STATCOM are, you know, static compensators that, you know, stabilize the grid, you know, to make the renewable integration smoother. And we were happy to have a very important participation over there. Moving forward, I'd like to share with you how is our footprint in the country. As you can see, we are extremely spread across this country. We are present everywhere. We have 8 factories across power transmission and power generation. We have 4 services centers where we bring our services close to the customer, where we have the operations of our customers so that we can be quicker and more efficient to serve them. We have 4 engineering and R&D centers where we do innovation, project execution, and other engineering activities to our local operations, to the local projects. But we also have an important participation growing on supporting our global projects and our global organization with the expertise and the brains, the brilliant brains that we have in this country to move our company also forward globally. If we look to the perspectives, and you can see the numbers of Siemens Energy that were public for the fiscal year 25 as well, the country globally, the company globally is also being very successful with a huge backlog. I think we are reaching globally 130 billion euros plus backlog. So it's a huge backlog to be executed. These numbers are public in the Siemens Energy side, but it means also when you have a large backlog that you need people to execute this backlog. We have to deliver at the expectation of our customers, and we have to execute with the operational excellence that is required to our shareholders, and where also India comes very much in the picture, supporting the execution of this huge backlog, also globally, not only locally. And when we talk about, the exports, we are very present in both sides. We are present on the sourcing of products and also components. We have a role, for instance, to be part of our global manufacturing network. Siemens Energy operates with a global network of factories, so the factories are kind of interconnected, serving the global customers. And we can either supply finished goods like a transformer, switchgear, turbine, but we can also, and we do, support components like a feeder factory. So we supply pieces and parts to other factories that supply or manufacture the final product. On the competence center, that's more on the services space, then we are doing, of course, engineering. So execution of projects, so if a project is won some other country, we get the project in India, and then with our engineers, we can do the complete design, specifications, programming, supply chain, everything out of there. We are also very active on the research and development, where we are part of the global R&D. R&D normally in multinational companies like ours is a global function, so we do not do only local, but you are integrate on a global portfolio management because, of course, the products are global products, sometimes with some local adjustment, but in principle, they are global. And our team comes in supporting and taking very high responsibility on the R&D. Moving forward, how we manage this company, we have a very professional and experienced board of directors. I will not go through the colleagues, but these are, you know, longer experienced people that are helping us driving this company forward. When we come down to the company, of course, people stays on the center of everything that we do, and we have a very strong team in our company delivering and serving our customers through marquee projects. And here I just brought up some important projects that we have done, also to illustrate, you know, the impact that our team, our people are, you know, generating this country. So we have projects like this resilient power generation. We had an issue in Mumbai end of last year where we had a problem in one thermal power plant generation, and we could recover this in a record time of 6 months. We could put up this plant operating again. We have, you know, as I said, the STATCOMs on the energy transmission where we are helping integrate the renewables in the country. On the right side, upper right side, we have the decarbonization of the industry. This is about the waste heat recovery, where we capture the flue gases and boil, generate more steam and power out of that. On the bottom left, we have the electrification of inland waterways. This is about e-ferries. So there are many projects in India. We got one in Kochi. There's another one that we won now in West Bengal, where India is starting to use the waterways for transportation, for people transportation. And we do have the electrification and automation of this kind of transport. When we talk about decarbonization, we are bringing, you know, sustainable power transmission. As you might know, circuit breakers are normally isolated by SF6. It's a gas that's very important, very much used in the industry, but very much contaminate in terms of CO2 footprint. And we have a solution that is clean air, is, you know, completely free from any CO2 footprint. And we are starting a project in India as a pilot. This is also a longer shot, but we'll see that, you know, the transmission will be migrating to decarbonized solutions in the future. And finally, large export, as we have very competitive products in India, very high quality, you know, very competent people behind this. So we are having more and more opportunities to address global markets, you know, supplying to our Siemens Energy company for the global customers they have. Moving forward, as I said, you know, innovation is in our blood. So this company exists for more than 100 years, only for one reason, because we are an innovating company. We are always reinventing ourselves. Because, of course, if we are stuck in one portfolio that's successful, this portfolio tomorrow might not be successful anymore. So that's why we invest so much in this. And, of course, in this part of that, just to give you a number. So we have in India 1,500 people working on engineering R&D for local and also for global. So it's quite a large team helping our company. We are very close to top universities. We signed another day, you know, last year, actually, MOU with Mumbai IIT, where we are working on the CCUS carbon capture. So this kind of innovative things that are coming only in the future, of course, this start very much on the academy when it start, you know, to come up. And we partner with the academy exactly to bring the technologies of the future. Sustainability is a key element on us. We are a company that works on the energy transition, and our mission is to energize the society while creating a sustainable future. And ESG could not be out of our agenda. It's actually on the top of our agenda, and we are a sustainability leader. So here we have our own internal targets where we want to be climate neutral in our own operation until 2030. We already have 100% of the feed of our operations with green energy. And we have zero waste to landfill, where we in India take all the waste to the right treatment afterwards. In terms of environment, as I said, people stays in the core of our success. Everything that we get, all the numbers that we see, is just a result of the work of a great team behind it. That's why we invest so much over there. You see on the training, we have an average 37 hours of training to our people. For 4,000 people, you can imagine how many, you can calculate how many hours we are investing in training. And the skilling is very important in a transforming world. New technologies, new ways of doing business, you know, new kinds of leadership. So we have to be training our people all the time. We also grow a lot of headcounts, lot of people coming new from the universities. You have to upskill and skill and reskill everybody. That's why we make a huge investment over there. We are fully committed with diversity. We reached this year 25, 15% of gender diversity, and not only on the offices or, you know, in the white collar, as we call, but we had also the start of diversity on the production line. We do have in our factories, manufacturing lines that are only built by women. And it's very good if you see around how, you know, women are more and more getting to that. Diversity is not only a moral imperative, but is also a social, is a business need, you know, from the strategic point of view. Diversity is proven that, you know, the more diverse environment that you have, more creativity and innovation you can get in a company. And then, of course, this boils down to a higher performance. And at the same time, as we grow the company, as we are growing, we definitely need to tap on the women talent to help us grow this company forward. Zero harm, we always say in Siemens Energy, safety is our license to operate. If we cannot do it safely, we better do not do that. We better leave the project to go, and we skip that, because we only do whatever is safe to our people and to our contractors. And in terms of social responsibility, our corporate social responsibility program has the name Energy for Good. In this program, Energy for Good, we are focusing in education, also education with a focus on diversity, how we bring more women to our operations, environmental sustainability, and sustaining communities. So these are the three main focus that we have in our corporate social responsibility program. Here, we are very proud to have many accolades and recognitions from industrial associations like CII, but we are also happy and proud to have recognitions from our customers, where they recognize our safety standards, our sustainability standards, and we keep working, you know, doing everything that we can to support our customers and our society. So I finish here at this part on the company, and I'd like to invite Harish to tell you about our numbers, and then I come back with the next part. Thank you so much so far.
Thank you, Guillermo. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our first investor meet and analyst meet. Before I start off with my presentation, just a couple of statements before you look at the slides, because this is the first year, and you would know for a demerged entity, it's a bit different in terms of how do we compare numbers, and to have context in terms of consistency and comparability, what we've done is we've also taken the energy segment, which was reported hitherto in Siemens Limited as a segment in the past 2 years. So you'll see on the left-hand side, there would be 23-24 numbers, which are basically coming from what has been already presented in the analyst meets earlier on. And then 25 is pure play the numbers of Siemens Energy India Limited. The other thing is, because of the India's 103, we would also, when you look at the financial statements once they are published, you would have the comparable numbers coming in from the date the company was incorporated, which was 7th of Feb 2024. So you would have an 8-month period versus 12-month period. I just thought that I should contextualize this so that it's clear for the discerning reader where exactly we are coming from. If I go to the next slide, this is where we are in terms of the year gone by. It's been pretty good in terms of the order growth, as you can see. So the last year we had a growth of 30%, and this year we had a growth of 49%. As Guillermo was mentioning, a very strong tailwind, particularly in the transmission sector, which helped also on the back of certain orders, which were big ticket for us, and translated into a CAGR of approximately about 29-30%. So that was important for us, because on the back of that, we were able to execute well on our revenue, a solid execution of our order backlog, and I'll come to the order backlog in a minute, and with a very strong focus on our operational efficiency when we were executing the revenue. So revenue grew pretty well compared to the last year. It was a bit tepid. In between 23 and 24, we were at about 5%. And this year we closed at 25% year-on-year growth, closing with 78 billion there. All numbers, by the way, are in billion rupees, not in crores. So you'll just have to do the translation wherever required. The important piece here is when I talk about orders and revenue, if you see between the last year and this year, we grew 20 billion about, and when we talk about orders year on year, 23-24, vis-a-vis 43 billion in 24-25, which is 2x. Whereas the revenue grew by 4 billion to 15 billion, which was four times what we grew in the last year. Important is, before I get into the EBITDA piece, the order backlog looks very robust. We are closing the year at 162 billion, which gives us a good view in terms of where we'll be in terms of the future. And it also secures our revenue for the coming years. In terms of profitability, the numbers speak for themselves. We closed 23 at 12.7%, 24 at 15.7%, and this year at 19.3%. Consistently, it's been 300 basis points and 360 basis points. Important to call out here is we had one-time effects, which was made known to all of you back then in Siemens Limited. When we did 24, we closed 24, there was close to about 1.1%, which came in from one-time effects. In 25, we have a 1.3%, and this was also disclosed in the quarter one of the fiscal year at Siemens Limited, just that we are on the same level playing field. So if we remove the one-time effects, 25 would be at 18% EBITDA. Going forward, Q4, the orders were at 1% growth, so we closed at 23.5 billion, and that was also because of certain advancement of big ticket orders which came through in Q3. And if supposing the big ticket orders were actually happening linearized, we would be at about 20% growth quarter on quarter. Revenue was strong because it's on the back of percentage of completion, project business, and so on and so forth. So that was at 26.5 billion is what we clocked in Q4. And translating into 27% growth in terms of quarter, year on year quarter. EBITDA was down by 40 basis points, but there's a bit of a context to this. Last year, there was a one-time effect, which was there, and it has an impact of about 1.5%. So the 18.5%, which was the profit, which was EBITDA, which was reported last year, would actually be a 17%, and it would compare well with our 18% for this year. So that was actually on the quarter on quarter. When we talk about the particular segments, Guilherme mentioned about power generation and also what's behind transmission. So we had grown pretty well on the generation side. The 47 billion actually translates to somewhere around 36% of our total order intake for the year. And in terms of our revenue of about 36 billion, it's close to about 46% of our revenue. So basically, it's quite well distributed between the two segments of transmission and generation. Profitability, again, was quite strong in terms of where we landed. Again, when we talk about Q4, the important piece is there was a one-time impact of about 280 basis points. So you'll have to discount that and basically compare the 16.7% for the last year, quarter four, with 16.9% for this year, removing the one-time effect. Overall, it's been a pretty strong year in terms of the power generation segment. The transmission part was further on the back of strong tailwinds coming from the sector, particularly for power evacuation on the renewable as well as on the wind side. Big ticket orders were back this year, and we closed at 84 billion. And it's not gone ahead. Sorry, my bad. So 64% of the order value is actually coming in from the transmission side, and also the revenue is close to about 54%, translating into 42 billion for this year. A good growth, again, of 76% on the top line, and also on the revenue side, it's about 40%. Q4 was pretty constant, so we were able to also ensure good execution on the orders because a lot of project business was executed in the last quarter, and that actually is a combination of revenue mix as well as portfolio mix, which resulted in a good profitability of 19.3%. Overall, in terms of our segmental, it's quite well diversified, and that's what translates into the bottom line. So we see a segment mix which is now increased towards transmission. So it's a 6%, which has moved interstate between the segments. So transmission is now closing at 46%. We would have basically, transmission is at 54% and then generation is at 46%. Geographically, also, our exports have gone up by 300 basis points, so 3% more. This is also adding, panning out well in terms of our bottom line development. Business mix, typically the service portfolio remained more or less sacrosanct at 25%, 25.6% to be precise. There's been a shift of about 5% between the project business and the product business. So the project business has actually come down by 5% to 42% basis revenue. And in terms of our product business, it's actually, we closed at 32%. So that's overall the view in terms of our financials. With that, I hand over to Guilherme for the looking ahead section.
Thank you, Harish. So we had the introduction. We learned a little bit about our company. Harish has shared the financial performance from 25 and from the Q4 last year. So now we try to take a look forward and how we are going with our company, navigating the opportunities of the Indian market, but also from the exports. So here we see, that based on the growth of India and how this country is developing, this is generating what we call an electrification cycle. So electrification cycle meaning that, to pump this growth, you need a lot of electricity behind it. And electricity also comes not only from the need for the growth, we also say electricity and electrification, because as the country goes through the decarbonization journey, many companies, especially in the industrial space, where they are today fed by non-sustainable, non-renewable energy, we also see a big opportunity where companies are electrifying their process. I can give you an example where we have compressors, pumping the gas or the oil through the pipelines. Normally, these compressors are driven by gas turbines. So the mechanical rotation of these compressors are made by gas turbines. And now we are looking at, because Indian local requirements, to electrify these compressors, meaning that I take the turbine out and I put an electrical motor with a renewable energy, then I can move this gas or this oil through the pipeline on an electrified mode. So all of these elements, of course, generate a lot of opportunities for us. And of course, this drives an important electrification cycle. We see that India has a perfect combination of very high aspirations. This country wants to become a developed country in 2047. And I see this is very much meaningful. This is not some wishful thing. It's something that has a wish and there is a plan behind driving this company forward. And I think the GDP growth speaks by itself, right? And the GDP growth does not happen by coincidence. It happens because there are hard work behind this GDP growth. And it is not only about that, the country wants to become self-reliant and energy independent. India today has, as we know, a high dependency from oil, from gas, from other elements. That's why we see, for instance, the green hydrogen coming as an alternative fuel, as long as it becomes economically viable. We see this as an opportunity, to replace the natural gas for the fertilizers, natural gas for industrial processes, or for power generation eventually. And, the energy independence will be very important for the stability of the country, right? So we saw what happened in Europe, countries depending from Russia gas, for instance, all of a sudden they were in a very complicated situation when the situation turned around. So India is very mindful on that and we see actions being taken over there. India wants to become a global manufacturing hub. There is a clear process of industrialization in the country. We can see this from the PLIs and all the incentives that the government is pushing. Before microprocessors, we see Apple booming and exporting big time. So all this movement on the industry is happening. And of course, this is good for us because we also are, we are manufacturer by definition. And we also invest in our own manufacturing, but also this again demands a lot of electricity so these factories can move forward. Technology sovereignty. So India does not want to stay eventually manufacturing, but still using technologies from abroad. India wants to develop its own technology, be fully owned by India, but also in partnership with our companies. And we are very happy to bring our technology for India. We are not a company that has something outside. bring to wind and sail. We really are embedded in the full structure of the country and the value chain of the country. And finally, the country wants to become net zero in 2070, where the decarbonization and the renewable is happening big time. India is already one of the largest customers in the world, largest country in the world in the renewable space. And all these aspirations of the country, of course, they have to be supported by something. So we see a stable country, we see very strong macroeconomics over there, fiscal prudency, low interest rate, inflation going down, a very well-managed finances of the country. This is more or less the fundament of a country, to move forward when the country is economically strong. Now, it's like a company with a strong balance sheet, then you can do stuff. If you do not have a balance sheet, what you can do, right? Country is exactly the same, right? And otherwise, it's just wishful thinking. And this is not the case of this country, fortunately. Then we also see a lot of reforms and policies happening. We just saw the GST reform that came up recently, putting $20 billion in the economy and pumping up the consumption. So this is also all about development. But we also see a lot of reforms on the energy sector. We can see now the reform that's going on the nuclear electricity, the Nuclear Power Act. So these, things around the civil liabilities, that's now in the winter session of the parliament, where the government is discussing how to allow private investment in the nuclear and how to simplify the process on the liabilities around. That's the fundamental piece to have what has been defined of 100 gigawatts of nuclear until 2040. So all of these reforms are being done mindfully to support the development. Demographic bonus. So this is a country of 1.5 billion people, 800 million people in the middle class. This middle class growing income. And when the income grows, also grows the disposable income when the families and the people start investing in things that they want. And it can be electrical appliances, it can be, industrial products. And all of these, of course, generates a huge demand for electricity and support from the industry. And one very important element for India that we see is that India has a very, very competitive electricity cost, right? So when we say that India has a 3.5 rupees per kilowatt, per unit, and the price is going down, maybe I'm talking about 3.5, is already 3.2, 3.1, because mainly driven by solar, and the solar is a very competitive one, and India has a huge potential for solar. Yesterday, we were discussing this in Rajasthan and Gujarat. You can count with 200 gigawatts of solar power. This is massive. Now it's like Middle East with a very competitive price. And this is, a very important element. Another day I heard on the data center space is a race for electrons. Everybody talks about NVIDIA and software and this and that, but what underpins the success of data center is available electricity with a competitive price. Because data center are huge consumers of electricity. If you do not have electricity or your electricity is too expensive, then you do not have a big chance to be successful as a country on the data center space. That's without no reason China and the US are putting power, in bigger thing. We are seeing our gas turbines in US growing tremendously because data center are buying gas turbines for captive generation. Because everybody needs electricity available and a good price to make the data center race be successful. Looking to this, and we see there, I have already said about the global consumption, the average consumption of energy in India or electricity, that we are here at one third of the average. You see the countries over there. How is the electricity consumption country by country? And we see also the GDP growth, how India, stands out, in comparison to other major countries. All of this drives to a situation that we have a huge growth in the Indian power sector coming forward. So the country should double, and it's happening as we talk, the power generation from 500 to almost 1,000 gigawatts of power in the years to come until 2032. That's what has been planned by the government, and it's happening. Major power will come from the renewable, from the Greenpeace, and the major of the renewable is solar, as I have said. When you put all this power, of course, you need a lot of transmission to evacuate this. Differently from the past, power of India was more related to coal and more to the east of the country where the coal mines are. When you talk about renewables, the sun is more to the north northwest of the country, Rajasthan, Gujarat, as I said, where we have to build the power transmission from scratch because there was no power transmission over there because there was no power generation. So that's why there is a huge demand for transmission development. And along with that comes, of course, the grid stabilization. And when we go to the bottom graphic on the right, on the left actually, on your right actually, we see, the industry electricity consumption tripling. And this comes because of the expansion of the industry that's happening, but also because of the element that I told you before on the electrification of the industry. And this electrification of the industry generates a lot of demand to bring the electricity to process that before were more driven by all the kinds of source of energy, like fossil fuels. And this makes this to be three times more in the years to come. All in all, a huge potential in the development of the electrical sector. When I look, to the key drivers, and I don't want to be repetitive because many of these we have already mentioned along my presentation. Maybe one that I would like to call out is the oil and gas. So exactly because India has a high dependency on the exports, the government of India also has changed the policy that was talking about the supporting policies, allowing, some sedimentary basins that were before a no-go, now they are open for exploration, also attracting private capital. So we see the OALP, so the open acreage auctions going big time. We have the 10th one on the table with, if I'm not wrong, with 28 blocks that I'm sure that should bring to India discoveries very soon. And this can be definitely a game changer for the country if the country finds enough gas in deep sea waters. This is a very important thing happening. The nuclear energy mission, as I said, there is concrete movement behind to get India back to the nuclear and make the nuclear a very important part of the energy mix. Data centers, I mentioned maritime, we also spoke about all these e-ferries, the transportation, electrification of the transport. All of these elements that we see over there with the policies and market developments lead to us to many opportunities across our portfolio. So in the generation side, be the expansion of the power generation, whenever it happens with gas, where we are focused in, but also a lot in the services side. So we have to provide service to our fleet of industrial gas turbines. Power transmission, we are, of course, across the board, as I have said, and every TBCB where we have a grid expansion, new transmission lines, STATCON, SYNCHRON, HVDC, you name it, Siemens Energy is present over there as a market leader. In the industry, we are present with our turbines for the captive power, supplying turbines over there, but also helping our industrial customers to go through their decarbonization journey with solutions like waste heat recovery. Data center is an important element. We are seeing this grow in India, so numbers vary very much nowadays. So we have around 1.2 gigawatts of data centers in the country. The future says 5, 9, 17, depends. Yeah, but I think that data center will be a big thing in this country as 1.5 billion people, all the data that's generated over here, the digital nature of this country should drive, but we still see this data center picking up. Now it's not like US, where you have data centers of 5 gigawatts everywhere. Here things are moving on, and we have some announcements like Google and other companies that are putting data centers that are, of course, in the right direction. Finally, the maritime, where we are looking very much for the electrification of the transportation, of the transport. So I'm already over time. So shortly here, how we look forward to India in our, let's say, strategy, if I can put it this way. We have basically three pillars over there. One, we want to keep our partnership with the country, our partnership with our customers, bringing more capacity, more portfolio, supporting the development of the country because the demand is super high. We want to expand India as a global hub. So Siemens Energy as a global company wants to leverage more the competency, the competitiveness, and the quality that India, Siemens Energy India can offer to our global operations. And although we are very much focused on our core portfolio, so generation, transmission, everything that I have said, we are also exploring new market fields where we can, like green hydrogen, we are not, we do not see much happening on our side, but of course we are working on that, supporting customers, regulatory, so that when it picks up, Siemens can have, as we have in other portfolio elements, an important share of the market. So we are looking across the border to the present, but also to the future, how we move forward. So here, in terms of, I was talking about investment, here are some, you know, investments that we did recently, or we announced recently at least. We are expanding our Calva factory for power transformers on the upper left. 1 month ago, 3 weeks ago, we break the ground in Aurangabad for our switchgear factory, where we are also expanding over there. We're inaugurating Raipur, our services center for steam turbines. You know, Raipur is an important center for the steel belt. We have a lot of steel companies over there, and we want to bring our services close to the customer, and we will think on additional, you know, services centers to be close over there. And Bengaluru is the inauguration of our offices over there, where we are bringing engineering to India for electrification, automation, digitalization of the industry, where we want to do more out of India to our global operations. So we are covering all the elements that I have said, and, you know, avoiding and making the meaningful investments whenever they are necessary. Finally, we want to bring value for you. We want to bring value to our customers. We want to bring value to our shareholders. And this is why we work daily with our 4,500 employees in SIO to make these demands become reality. In our priorities, we have the number one, as I have said, is zero harm. We are a company fully committed with safety. We want our employees and contractors to come to us to work and go home to their families in the same way that they came in the morning, or even better, happy back home after 1 day of work. And we make also all the investments, and we are very much consistent over there. Profitable growth. There is no successful company. There is no, you know, perennial development of a company if there is no profit. The profit is absolutely necessary so that we can keep investing in factories, R&D, you know, bringing more things to our customers. People stay on the core of our strategy. Without people, there is no success. That's why we invest so much, not only in hiring, but also skilling our people forward. And finally, and not less important, our customer delight, because at the end of the day, the customers are the reason for our existence. Without customers, we are not here. So we are here extremely committed to make our customers successful with our solutions. Yeah, so I think I finalize here. I went through all my presentation, and I thank you so much for your kind attention. And Radhika, I think now back to you, right, for the Q&A session. Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think we'll just start the Q&A session now. There are people behind. I know there are a lot of questions. We can go to each one of them separately. Could you also just maybe, you know, introduce yourself? Yeah. And
hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Yatin from Nippon. Thanks for this great presentation, and I think the long-term outlook, you're really positive. But if you can help us understand our existing portfolio, how is it aligning with the long-term and the near-term growth strategy? How is it aligning with the long-term and the near-term strategy in India? So maybe just an example, like the HVDC is a huge opportunity in India, but in our portfolio, we are only focusing on VSC, where, you know, within, if you look at the ordering in India, VSC doesn't seem to be that prominent. It is the other technologies which the country is more focusing on, maybe because of cost, because of anything. So when we look at the India opportunity, are we running the risk of not addressing the entire market through specific technologies? Or when you mention evolving for the future, do you think you would like to add some of the more technologies to address the broader market?
Oh, that's right. No, thank you for the question. It's very, very, very important one. So I think that's, yeah, it's very important one, because, you know, when you have a global company with a global portfolio, you try to align these on a global perspective, right? So we do, of course, alignments with important markets, and India is definitely one of them. But we not cover, you're absolutely right, the entire energy transition story of India. So if you look to important elements like solar generation, we are not in solar generation. And for everything, there is a reason why we are not there, right? So it's not because we do not want. We just see that the industry for solar generation is an industry that actually started in Germany 30 years ago, right? So when I lived in Germany, I was paying a piece of my energy account to, you know, to finance the implementation of rooftop solar in Germany came to 20 gigawatts of solar, you know, 20 years ago, something that India is doing now. The question is that this industry became a big commodity. You know that, right? So it comes basically from China for the whole world, not only. Yeah, so that's an energy, that's a portfolio that we do not see value, you know, and how we can differentiate. So this is one of them. The other one that's also important in India is the coal generation, coal-based generation. This is a decision that the company took globally because of our sustainability targets to not be part of coal generation. So four years ago, we stepped out of new additions of coal. We believe that the way is to convert coal to gas, you know, and we are doing many projects in the world to convert, to make this conversion, because the gas is much less, you know, with much lower CO2 footprint, right? On the HVDC, so these two, we are not here and not anywhere because of the company decisions. On the HVDC, we are very much like here. You saw we were the first HVDC project. Then we come to the discussion LCC, VSCC, right? That is something that I think you also mentioned in your question. Here is again is a strategic decision. The market for HVDC globally is immense, right? Especially because many countries in Europe, for instance, US to a certain extent, they are going to renewables big time, mainly for energy security, and this generates a lot of renewable integration, where we believe, not only we, but I think the industry believes that the best technology for renewable integration is VSC. VSC is more modern, it's power electronic basis, right? It's a technology that comes with a lot of features already embedded, like black started, you know, many things that the LCC does not have. We have to add all of these things, because LCC was fought at the beginning. You saw our first project was 25 years ago in India, was just to make book transmission from point A to point B. There were no renewables over there. Yeah, it was more thermal power generation to just connect. Now, HVDC is about connecting book transport of power, but at the same time integrated the renewables with the intermittency and all the quality of the energy. So VSCC is the right answer for that. And because of the amount of projects in the world, so then, and we have to focus our resources globally, and we focus on the VSCC. For India, it's not good news, because India still have LCC, and the reason for LCC is because there are many long lines, high power, because of the continental nature of the country. So VSCC maybe is not the adequate for that, the LCC, is because of the losses that we have over there. But we are looking forward to bring VSCC to higher voltage levels, where then, you know, LCC will be completely unnecessary, right? There is just the reason for LCC is long lines, high power. But from the technology point of view, LCC is a technology that's being phased out, right? So in our global strategy, we focus on the VSCC, and when we come down to India, then of course, we have to follow the global strategy, because we are, and HVDC are projects that we look at the pipeline on a global perspective, right? Because there are so many projects that we have to add. So when I say all of this said, I would say that our portfolio is very much aligned with India growth, because we are in the power transmission across the border, we are in the energy efficiency on the thermal power generation, because we have many thermal power plants that were done with coal, were done with our own steam turbine technology, the large steam turbines. And these plants have to grow the efficiency. And the efficiency, we are working modernization, upgrade, you know, digitalization of these plants, flexibilization to integrate with the renewables. So we also present over there in the transmission, also in the industrial space. So I think that we are very much well covered with our portfolio. Okay? Long answer, but you know, I think your question was quite comprehensive. Thank you for that.
Hi, good morning. Hi, good morning. This is Mohit Kumar from ICICI Securities. My question is, how much are you localized on the HVDC side? What is the percentage terms?
HVDC,
VSC, HVDC, and we just talk about the funnel of order pipeline for VSC, HVDC for us, for domestically and global.
In terms of localization of HVDC, HVDC is not is a solution, right? So when we do HVDC in India, we have an important piece of localization. That's all the power transformers we do in India with our factory in Kalwa. All the engineering of the HVDC we do in India. The only part that we import is the what we call the IGBTs. This is the, you know, the semiconductors. And this is something that's not available in India. Now, there is no production over there. There are initiatives of the country and some companies that are trying to bring the IGBT production to India. But these we have to have a huge scale, right? Because all these industries are very need a lot of scale. So as long as we have these, of course, we would consider the localization of the IGBTs, not only for India, but also for other markets. So we do have a localization. It depends project by project. And but fundamentally, what we bring out from Germany is on the microprocessor side, on the electronic side, that's the IGBTs.
My question is that, of course, India needs 60% localization, right, for the future HVDC project. For this particular VSC HVDC, there is exemption. But as you go into maybe the next lot of VSC HVDC, the requirement may go up to 60%. So are we achieving the 60% or is there a plan to?
We can achieve depending how we configure the project, right? And how much value we bring to the country. When you go... Is bad there? Ah, therefore. Oh, that's very bad. Can you hear better now?
Or maybe we can switch off.
Can we switch off the air conditioning? Because of the noise, right?
The rattling noise.
The AC we can switch off.
Maybe it's better now, no? I can start try to speak louder. Or I'll try to switch off the air conditioning. It's not so hot today, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you can move to the front.
Guilherme, you can try this mic. You can try this mic. This mic is better. Okay.
I think it's the AC.
No, but I think they are too much to the back and the air conditioning. You can come to the front. Also, there are seats over here if you want to. It's okay? So, I understand your 60%. Project by project, we are looking how we do that. But I tell you, the main piece of localization that we have to do is the localization of the semiconductor, the IGBT. And this is something that we do not manufacture. We buy it. We buy it from companies that are basically in Europe or Japan. And that's why, you know, I can't localize it by myself, right? So we are working on that and see how we do. But, you know, as I said, that transformer engineering, capacitors, there are so many elements that we use cooling systems that we can localize to grow until the 60%.
One more question, if I may ask. FY25 was a great year in terms of transmission order inflow. But as we enter FY26, the order pipeline, the order prospect, is it as good as it was last year, or do you think there is a moderation going forward?
I think that there was, from 24-25, a peak of projects because of the demand that we have been seeing. So the TBCB auctions came in 25 big time. And of course, we cannot grow the market, you know, 25-40% every year. So there is a growth, and then, you know, it's not flat in the market, but then you come more to a normalized growth, you know, maybe 80%, something like that in the market. That's like, you know, I give you an example. Last year, if I'm not wrong, we had 10 StatCons. Thereof, we got more than 50% market share. We got out of the 10, we got 5, something like that. This year, we cannot have 15 StatCons and then 20 StatCons, because, you know, it's too much. You cannot execute also this. So then we see that based on these 10 StatCons, that's quite a number of StatCons, then we grow on the top of that. So we still, of course, see and the growth of the transmission market going forward, but more on a higher baseline that we had in 25.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Shubdeep Mitra from Nuvama. So my first question is with regard to the HVDCPs, as you well explained. Now, if I look beyond India, right, you talked about a large global opportunity for VSC HVDC. So is there a large potential for export orders for VSC HVDC that you would be looking at? And if you could quantify or give us some color on that.
For sure. Look, I come back to the point where HVDC is a solution, right? So there are many components over there. So when I look at the transformers for HVDC, we export transformers and can also be HVDC. We do transformers in Calgary for HVDC application that we can do for local, but also for export. And we did this in the past, and we are looking forward for doing that. When we talk about the engineering of HVDC, like, you know, the engineering, the control and protection panels that, you know, control the complete system, this we do out of India. Yesterday we had, and this will be in the LinkedIn today, we were flagging off some panels for StatCons with a power grid for Amgar, and we were showing that we are there doing HVDC for Norfolk, UK. So Siemens Energy won a project for HVDC in UK, for offshore connection, and the engineering for the control and protection for the intelligence. Yeah, because you know HVDC has a lot of microelectronics over there, but there is a lot of control and instrumentation around to make it happen. This we do complete out of India for export. So what we do not, again, to the question that the colleague did, what we do not do in India is the power converters. Because the power converters depend on the IGBTs. That's the core of the power converter, and the IGBT comes from abroad. So there is no point to bring 80%, I don't know, from the power converter from Germany to here, put this together and send back to, so what's the point, right? You have to do look at this as an economic perspective, whether it makes sense or not, right?
Understood. If I move to the turbine side of the business, especially steam turbines, what quantum of current revenues would be, let's say, export-led, and what kind of growth are you seeing, or sustainable growth are you seeing there on the turbine side of the business?
So on the portfolio element, we do not disclose how much growth we do by portfolio element. But I can tell you from the gas, from the steam turbines, we should differentiate in two kinds of steam turbines. There's a large steam turbine, you know, that goes along, of course, with large power generation. This, we do not bring new, we do not manufacture large steam turbines in India. We do not import new ones because basically we are not in the coal market, right? So then there is no point there. What we do is serves on our large steam turbine fleet that we sold along the time. And we are looking forward, as I have said, also to the nuclear market, because then we can come back with our large steam turbines for the nuclear. We do not do reactors, of course, but we can do the steam island, as we call, right? The nuclear power plant, we have the reactor that generates the heat, and they have the electricity that comes out of there. There we will be on the industrial steam turbines. Then, of course, we have the Vadodara factory, and we are present across the entire process industry in India, and we are starting to export more steam turbines out of Vadodara to other countries. I can tell you qualitatively, but not in numbers.
Understood. Last piece from my side. If I were to look at the data center optionality or potential, right, I think your presentation talked about an 8 gigawatt incremental capacity for data center that's expected to come up by 2030. How can one look at, you know, your share of the wallet share of CAPEX that comes in data centers? How large an opportunity can it be for you?
Yeah, so depends how the data centers, how the developer of the data center is looking at, right? So today, our share has been more on the substation, because it's basically about the grid integration, grid connection. So you put a data center on Amazon and you have to connect to the grid. There is a need of substation, and of course we can do the substation. Substation compared to the size of a data center investment is a small piece, right? So the bulk of the data center investment comes from the racks and the, you know, processors from NVIDIA, and also we are just a junior guy connecting the energy that's necessary, but it's not the major part of the investment. When we look at US, then we are not only doing substations, but we are doing the complete gas power generation. So there are data centers in the US today that are on the gigawatt scale. So then sometimes you need four large gas turbines, you know? So then it's a huge business for us. Still for the data center, it's not, yeah, because proportionally, but it grows, right? And we can also do the power distribution within the data center. So depends how, you know, the data center is configured, then it changes. But if you ask me generically from the total CapEx, if you say, you know, Google is 1 billion, you know, we might be with a substation, $20 million, right? So 1 to 20, you know, that's just to give you a sense of proportion of what we're talking about. Unfortunately, we are not in the microprocessors business.
Got it. Thank you so much.
This is Bhavin from SBI Mutual Fund. Couple questions. First, when I look at the services piece, about a quarter of revenue, it's very impressive, especially for an emerging market country. We usually look this in developed countries. Could you help us understand the services piece better? What part is where you're supplying the spare parts, servicing the existing installed base? And what part of this is where you are an offshore arm for the parent services? In your presentation, you did speak about some of the global engineering part. The second is if you can help us understand the transmission piece of your business, where there is a industrial steam turbine, which is manufacturing revenue, spare parts would be there. Then in your presentation, you did talk about the larger piece, which is usually, I understand, will be the services part. So how would you break the generation piece between the larger and the industrial piece? And when we look at the profitability of 18%, looks very impressive. And this, we see it's sustainable over a very long period. Oil and gas was a segment which was a part of this segment, which was earlier. When you look back like 10 years ago, it's been similar level of profitability. So what part is the services piece that drives this profitability? So two piece, just help the understand the generation between the services and the manufacturing. And the services piece, can you help us understand what's the third party or to the parent, and what's the install base services in this space?
Okay, I will start with the generation services. So the generation services that we do is fundamentally for the domestic customers. So in some cases, we might do by a special demand that, you know, we do and serves a power plant somewhere else. But fundamentally, when we see these numbers of revenue or order intake for services, these are for the local customers that we have. And we do have, as I said, the largest steam turbine fleet for the thermal power generation in India belongs to us, be manufactured by us, our own technology. So that's where it comes from. And when we do services on the large steam turbines for the thermal power plants, these services done by our people here. And depending if you need a spare part, then it might come from Germany or from another factory, because we do not manufacture in India large steam turbines for the reasons that I have mentioned. When it goes to industrial steam turbines, then we have the full value chain in India. We, of course, have the people servicing, a pulp and paper or sugar and ethanol plant, and all the spare parts, everything comes from our own factory because we do have the local manufacturer, right? So this is more or less how we compose this business. The next question, again, just to help me refresh.
So how the 36 billion revenue, how would you divide between the large and the industrial piece?
So this is split, we do not disclose, you know, how much this is split between one another. We just say that we have a large subs piece on our revenue because we have this large fleet, but we not go down to the number by portfolio limit.
So 20 billion actually comes from services, because if you had seen the chart, so 25% of the turnover is coming from service, and the remaining is from project and product. So that's about 20 billion overall.
The second is, help us understand the services piece better. What part is services to the parent, and what part is services on the existing fleet? And 25% of the 130 billion revenue is the services piece.
That's the competency hub part.
Yeah, that's what I say. You know, actually what we do for the global is more on the competence hub that I said, where we have these engineers doing services for R&D, engineering, project execution, and this is more on an hourly basis model, right? So we are just actually doing for them, but the project's not with us. So if there is something happening in another country, this country uses India as a resource pool to help them executing, and then our business goes more on the direction of selling hours, if you like, right? So if I look to the overall number without giving precise percentage, I would say that most by far piece of the services is on the domestic market, and a smaller piece is on the export of services as ours to our headquarters.
So Bhavin, to answer, he's right. So the domestic, so out of the 20 billion, a significant portion is domestic. The global part is still small, and this is what is actually evolving now with the service centers which have been now set up in Bangalore and so on and so forth.
Just the last question is, when we look at the energy portfolio of the parent, there is a within India, the missing piece is the compression systems, the factory in Ahmedabad, near Ahmedabad. Would that be integrated into the India operations? Then we kind of become more, the portfolio becomes more aligned with the parent entities?
I think, you know, to answer the last part of your question, the portfolio is aligned because we are serving the Indian market with the compressors. So we have very important customers on ONGC and IOCL, you name it, GAIL, no? So the gas transportation. So we are serving this. How we serve is a different thing. We have different companies in the country. Actually, we have three companies in India. We have SAIL, We have Siemens Energy India Turb Machinery, that's the Naroda colleagues, right, with the compressors. And we also have the Siemens Gamesa colleagues in Chennai. So these are the three companies. The portfolio that we do in SAIL is everything but compressors and wind. But we are serving the country as a whole, right? If you ask me about integration, this is something that I cannot answer you, because we will depend very much on the headquarters strategy when they want to do that.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, this is Parikshit from HDFC Securities. So my first question is, you spoke about expanding India as a global hub. So what does it exactly mean? So both for transmission and power generation, if you can help us understand, are there any allocated market for us, for the export markets, what are the products you're looking to export? So as a percentage exports, 23-24%, so is it going to increase from here? So any strategy or any guidance there?
Yeah, so when we say to transform India, or not to transform, because we are indeed already a global hub, is to increase this contribution of India to our global operations. It goes in both directions. It goes in the direction of services, in the sense of grow headcounts in India that can support the execution of projects globally. Like I gave the example of the HVDC in UK and the power plant in Taiwan. You know, we can do this kind of things out of India using our manpower. This is one element. We also look at India how to provide internal services, like we do supply chain or we do IT, some elements that we do internally from India to our company. This is also like a GCC. Now we have so many models like this in India. So this is there, and we want to grow, to expand to other functions and increase the amount of projects that we can do out of the country. But again, this is a man-hour kind of business, right? So we are just providing that. So this is what we're doing. And we are also looking at export of products and other kinds of components to our customers or to our factories. And here is not that we have markets that are located to us. So it's not, you know, India, we have this market A, B, and C. We do not operate like that globally. Actually, we operate in the factories like, you know, global manufacturing networks, that, you know, there is a global demand, there is a global network of factories, and how we serve the market. So it can be that we are serving US because our data centers, but tomorrow there is a project of switch gears in Taiwan, and Germany will decide where we should serve according to the project pipeline that they have. And this, you know, as we grow, there is a trend, you know, that as the export could grow along, because if you expand, of course, your global contribution, the export should grow. But how it grows, we have to see how Siemens Energy wants to leverage our operations forward, because the export piece is not in our hand. The domestic market is in our hand. We can, of course, play with our cars over here. But when it's about export, actually, the headquarters decide where I need you, right? Because it's their responsibility to decide for a given country, for a given customer, what is the most suitable factory to supply. That can be about lead times, about the qualification of the factory, suitability of the portfolio, all these elements coming when is a decision there.
Okay. Other question is on HVDC. So we have seen other incumbents, both GE Vernova and Hitachi, announcing large capex programs and expansion of their HVDC facility. So in light of that, how competitive we are in terms of pricing while bidding for orders, large orders here? So do you think we are competitive enough in line with their cost? So how does one read that?
Absolutely. So we see ourselves very competitive on a global perspective. We are market leaders in HVDC VSC, and we are also competitive in India. And we are not concerned about these announcements, because we also announced we have, you know, our competence center. We are expanding our people. We have a localization of our power transformers. That's a very important piece of an HVDC solution. And again, I come to the point, then we talk about the localization of HVDC, the missing piece, that's the IGBT, so the core of the power converters. This, any supply will keep importing, because there is no local manufacturing. So even if you put something over here, you have maybe to do a kind of final assembling, but the real manufacturing is not there, because the core is not there. So as long as we have local manufacturing of these power electronics, then you can, of course, start saying that I local manufacture HVDC. But today there are not many, you know, in the world. There are few suppliers for IGBTs. And India has a very clear intent to bring this manufacturing down to the country for these IGBTs, and then, of course, we will consider the localization. But as it is today, how the supply chain is built, we do not see this as a concern in terms of competitiveness.
Just one last question to Harish. So Harish, in the current order book of 16,000 odd crores, so how much will be related party orders, any sense, like from the parent entities?
Related party in the sense with the parents?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there would be a specific number as such, but then, as we said, the local for global is quite a small piece at this point in time. So predominantly, it's all servicing the domestic market. So that's where it comes from. So only the piece, which is, you know, particularly the service part, will be there. And that's not got a significant amount of lead time in terms of order book. It's book to bill, 1:1.
So largely the exports are third party then, yeah, in that sense. Sir. Thank you.
Sir, I have a question on the capacity timelines. So you are already doing the capex on transformer side as well as on the switchgear side. So can you tell us the timeline of commissioning of these capacities, and are there enough inquiry build up with you already for these capacities, both on the domestic as well as on the export? Like you answered on the export side that it's still dependent upon how things pan out, but on the domestic side, how are the inquiry build up for the offtake of your incremental capacity that you would be commissioning over a period of time? So first on the timelines and then on the inquiries.
Yeah. So on the timelines, the factory are now, so Kalwa, the transformers we start earlier, and we are in full swing in the construction. So we expected that this factory should be ready end of 26, beginning of 27. So it depends very much, because civil construction, all these things, you cannot be super precise, but will be, you know, from half of 26 to beginning of 27. For switchgear, we just broke the ground another day, so we are starting, you know, demolishing and doing things. This should come also along end of 26, along 27. So this is more or less when they will be made available. And in terms of pipeline, you know, in transmission, locally and globally, whatever capacity you put available, it's immediately demanded, right? So we see so many projects coming up on the TBCBs in India, that we are filling the factories, you know, filling the factories with all these orders. So capacity is not an issue. Capacity is actually something that we have to manage due to the excess of demand, and that's why we're expanding. To the other point of your question, the export is more or less how I have answered the colleagues here. So the export is something that we do not manage as our own decision, because actually we are demanded for the export, right? So I can say one order that we took, you know, I think it was 25 that we got Iraq was, yeah, 25. So there was a big order from Iraq. There is a reconstruction project in Iraq, and Siemens Energy got a very large order in the country for the reconstruction of Iraq, and not only transmission, but also thermal gas-fired generation. And when Siemens Energy got this project, you know, then they can say, look, we need the GIS, and GIS we'll do in India. Yeah? Gas turbines will be Berlin. And then but it's not that we decide, oh, I will do that by myself. Yeah, I have not this authorization, because it's not my call, right? But also as global, there is a huge demand for equipment. We get, of course, more and more requests for supply, because we have a very good factory quality price that we can, you know, supply for. Okay. Yeah.
And how confident are you on the pricing of the transformers and power transmission related components? Given the way that every player is now expanding. So how do you see the cycle? What would be your view of the entire cycle by FY27 or maybe by FY28?
We see the price keeping on the same level because, you know, despite of the expansions that we see, the demand is still very high locally and globally, because the energy sector is spending big time. So the capacities are coming along to support India so that India does not have a shortage of equipment. But still, there is an opportunity, you know, for the price being kept up, because the demand still will be high for the years to come. We cannot predict for how many years, because nobody knows. Right? The world is so unpredictable nowadays. Everything can happen in this world. But, you know, nothing disruptive happening, right? We see the price kept on the same level. And of course, we are also working very strongly on operational excellence, that we can keep improving our costs and also the price to the customers.
Understood. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So this is Sumit Kishore from Axis Capital. First question is, over the next 1 to 2 years, which are the VSC HVDC projects that you see coming up for award? And roughly, what would be the size of the opportunity for
Siemens Energy here. We know that the South Old Pod HPDC project is currently up for award, but what are the other opportunities that you see over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so as this renewable evacuation grows, as per the National Transmission Committee, so these numbers actually we get from the government, né? So this where is our source of information to our market analysis. We see one, two projects of HVDC per year. Most of them should be LCC, but we see maybe one project of ESCC every second year.
Project right now. The next one may come after the gap of 18 months or 24 months.
Yeah, there are some discussions on Mumbai, because Mumbai needs new feeders for the city, so maybe come another one next year. But you know, the predictability of the project is also not that, right? So we know that it will come, but we do not know exactly when. And sometimes come a lot of projects at the same time. So we are seeing that, you know, VSC will be part of the story. And we also believe that step by step, India will migrate from LCC to VSC, as we see other countries also doing. And we are working also, you know, to show the benefits, you know, of VSC when it's about renewable integration. So let's see how the projects go, but maybe one project every second month, second year, sorry.
The second question is on your steam turbines business. You also mentioned, you know, in the generation piece that flexibilizing the steam turbines in India, you know, is going to be an opportunity, especially as, you know, the technical minimum has to be brought down for the thermal power projects. So what is the size of this opportunity that you see? Because already this is proving to be a problem that the country has to solve.
Yeah. You know, this is an important opportunity, and it's an opportunity that happens on the digital space. So just shortly on the techniques, you know, because of the renewables, sun goes up, sun goes down, there is wind, there is no wind. The thermal power plant has to step in and step out as quick as possible, right? Because otherwise you have a gap of energy or you have an excess of energy. And the thermal power plants, basically all the coal power plants, they are not so quick, right? So you have to do some adaptations over there. Sometimes a mechanical adaptation, we have to do a kind of modernization of the mechanics of the turbine. But the main piece is on the flexibilization on the softer side, that we can accelerate the ramp up and ramp down so that you can offset the variations of the risk. So that's what we do. So in terms of opportunities, it's important because otherwise, as India made an option to do the base load with coal plus renewable, this is more or less the model, these coal plants have to react in the timing that the renewable demands, right? So that you can offset these variations. In terms of volume, this is not so, if I put, you know, to our audience, it's not a big number, because normally it's more software and some instrumentation that we do. It's very important from the application point of view to make the story viable, renewable plus coal. But from the volume perspective, it's a smaller volume, to be honest.
So one question for Harish, the last one. You know, with your order backlog and the growth visibility that you have, how should we think about the scope of operating leverage, you know, in your business in terms of employee and other expenses over the next 2-3 years? Could you comment on that? Yeah.
Yeah, so good question. So basically, because of the scaling.
It seems to be off.
It's on?
No, it's off. No. His mic?
No.
Not yet, no?
Am I audible?
No.
Are you good?
No.
Oh, it hasn't.
Can you try this one?
I think
No, it's not.
Is it better? Is it better with this?
Yes.
Thank you. So in terms of scalability, definitely with the volumes coming in, the proportion of the employee cost will not go in line with, you know, what is it right now. So we'll have echoes of scale coming in. So that would be a quick answer to your question. And also a lot of digitalization, which will also take place. So it's not just people, but it's also the digitalization where there's a high accent from the company, globally as well as locally as well. So short answer is it will actually come down in due course, but not, you know, in a significant manner, but definitely the proportion will be less.
And gross margins are sustainable?
Gross margins are sustainable. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you. This is Puneet from HSBC. Can you talk about the new products that you want to bring to India from localization perspective in next 2 years? And what are the products that you see becoming competitive in your global factory model to be manufactured out of India?
Yeah, so basically from our entire portfolio that I have shown, the only portfolio elements that we do not manufacture in India, I would say that's gas turbines. for the reason there is not enough demand for that. And so then there does not justify a localization of these products. And the second portfolio element is the electrolyzers for green hydrogen, where we see this as a potential for the future, but not yet with enough volume to justify a factory. We have a factory for electrolyzing in Berlin, where we have 1 gigawatts of electrolyzer PEM. This factory can be scaled up to 5 gigawatts, if I'm not wrong. And we're still fighting to fill the first gigawatt, you know. That's why green hydrogen is definitely part of the future equation. We have invested a big money on this in terms of R&D and also factory. But we see, you know, that the reality on the ground is that ramp up is not at the speed that we have expected. And normally green hydrogen is more ramping up where we have a regulatory obligation. Yeah, because the economics are simply not there. We believe that we will come, but it will take time. Right? So that's why we are not talking about localization, but we are very much keen to partner in India with companies, and we are discussing this on a confidential way, where we can maybe not fully localize the electrolyzer, but we can bring the stacks, the kind of the pieces of the electrolyzer, and make a final assembly in India, the packaging in India, all the balance of plant in India. So that's more or less like the HVDC. We do not have the core, but everything else we do in India that brings the localization level to important level. This is what we are doing. And as soon as we have a clear confidence that there is enough demand, then of course we will consider localization. For us, it's very clear the make in India is very much clear for us. We are committed for make in India for 100 plus years, and we will not hesitate to keep expanding our make in India as long as this from a business standpoint, from an economical standpoint makes sense, right? It's not an issue to invest or not invest. It's to invest when it makes sense.
Yeah. Other than PEM, there's nothing in the pipeline in the next 2 years.
I think these are the two portfolio elements that we have in our portfolio globally that we do not have local manufactured. Of course, we are on research in CCUS. We are researching many other things. But these are even longer shots. No? Okay. One thing that we are looking at, as I said, is the nuclear with the large steam turbines that we also have in our portfolio. As long as we see that the nuclear will become a strong thing in India, we will consider how we bring the large steam turbines to India. There's also an important element, maybe to bring another portfolio element that we have, but not yet in India, are the synchrons, the synchronous condensers, right? For the grid stabilization, we have the STATCON and the synchron. India so far has not been auctioning the synchrons, but now as we understand, we start coming. Maybe one first synchron, two synchrons should come in 26. This will start with imported machines because, again, these are more or less generators that we use in the power generation, right? So as soon as we see that it ramps up, then we can, of course, consider further localization. In localization, there are many degrees of localization, right? You do not need to do 100% in the country. You can do a phased approach to of the localization. As soon as you see the market is going up, then you can increase your depth of localization, right? It's more or less our strategy forward.
And anything in your product portfolio that you see yourself becoming more relevant for the global factories in next 2 years?
You know, on a global base?
Yeah. In your existing product, you think something that you've not been able to export because you were not very cost competitive, you'll become more competitive in next 2 years?
If I look at the global basis, it's hard for me to say one portfolio element that's not selling well, right? Because the energy is demanding everything from compressors, steam turbine, power transmission, gas, you name it, everything. So if you look at the numbers of Siemens Energy globally, and there you see that they go in a deeper granularity of, you know, the numbers, you know, by portfolio and all, you see that the success of the company is across the board, right? So because the market is demanding and we are quite competitive. But if I would name, you know, what are the two main elements that are really pushing up now in the future is gas turbines and power transmission. These are the two main elements in our portfolio. Gas turbine is not the case of India, as we said, but power transmission, we are number one player in the world. And in India, we also a leader in the market, and we will keep this forward.
And lastly, on the transmission side, we've seen more opportunities on interstate transmission. Are you think anything emerging from the intrastate side as well, or?
Absolutely. So we see, you know, that in the interstate, we see a lot of development. We are seeing a lot of 765 kV lines coming, you know, to evacuate all this power. but the electron has to come from Rajasthan down to the factory to consume it, right? So you cannot have a gap in between, because otherwise the evacuation is not complete. And I think on the state level, this should happen. So expansions, and we are actually seeing even StatCons come in Maharashtra. We see a lot of things coming in Gujarat. We see just approved an offer yesterday for Kerala. So we are seeing projects coming up in a bigger time across the states. And this has to catch up so that you can evacuate the power down to the consumption, to the load. No?
Understood. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Can you pass it there? We'll just take maybe last two questions.
Yeah. I had a question on mix. You said 23% of your revenue is exports. Would it be fair to assume bulk of the exports would be your ER&D services that you're doing here? What are these exports, this 23% of your revenue mix?
The exports, 23%. What's the composition?
The composition of exports on the product side, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think mostly, is it mostly in the power transmission space?
Okay. Because I think you mentioned that bulk of your service exports is primarily ER&D. So how much would be service exports in that mix?
Mix of service exports in?
So we do 23% export mix in your revenue.
So you want to know what percentage within the 23%, what percentage within the 23 is services?
Yes.
I mean, I can't go into granular details because it is 23% overall, and there is a service component which is within the generation piece, which is there. Mm-hmm. And to answer your broader question, which is in terms of where is the 23% coming from, it is coming from products, which is basically the transformer part.
Fine.
You can say that most of the export is product, and most of the products are transmission.
Okay. Secondly, if I look at your manpower split, I think you mentioned 4,500 employees, out of which 1,500 employees are in ER&D services. So, is there a scope for a significant ramp up in terms of revenues from ER&D services alone?
As a company? I have a difficult to hear.
From the
ER&D services, engineering and R&D services.
So they're saying you have the R.
How much we ramp up? Yeah. So acoustically I cannot understand you.
No, so one third of your manpower is actually into engineering and R&D services.
Yeah, got it.
The 1,500 employees is what you put in the presentation.
I explained it to
him. Yeah, so the 1,500 employees that we have in R&D engineering that work most locally to global, right? So this is the base that we have, and this number will grow. But the growth of this number, I don't have this clear now. And I would not be sharing this as well because of forward guidance.
Okay.
But you know, it depends very much again on how headquarters wants to leverage us, right? So if they decide, and the decision is there, I can share that the company wants to leverage more India for the global. That's definitely.
Mm-hmm.
How much will be that and how we are ramping up, this will depend on their own global plan. And out of this global plan, how much they will devote to India to be expanded over here. And this is something that we also get to know along the time.
Okay. Just to get a bit of context, how much was this staff strength 2 years back? And how much are you planning to hire in the next 2 years?
On the global?
No, on the engineering R&D side.
On the total R&D?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we do R&D stroke engineering. So for us, there are pure R&D that we do, but there are also a lot of engineering for project execution.
Yeah, so what I want to understand is today you have 1,500 people. So what was this strength 2 years back?
What was the 1,500 two years back?
Would be somewhere around 600 to 750 2 years ago. 23.
And what are you planning to hire over the next 2 years?
As he said, you know, this is something which is dependent on what comes through from the global, because the pull, the demand pull needs to come from the global. And then likewise, we will be ramping up.
Fine. Thanks. The last question I had was, I think in the first slide on transmission, you mentioned transporting and storage of energy. So what are you doing in storage specifically?
Yeah, so storage for us is more an application. We are not a player on the storage across the border like many companies do. So we are not in large BESS system. This we are not. Right? We use storage more on the grid stabilization, because we have some projects where we combine storage with SYNCHRON, with STATCON to secure the stabilization of the grid. So we are more a niche player on the storage, not a major player on the storage. Reason for that is that storage, as you know, 60-70% of the value comes from the batteries. We are not a battery manufacturer. We're not going to be a battery manufacturer. And that's why, you know, the value that we can add is very low. So then we apply this when we have an application that makes sense on the overall context of the solution we are providing.
Okay. Just a related question. Do you see storage cannibalizing transmission spends?
No. No. I think storage is actually complementing the transmission in terms of stabilization, because storage can stabilize the grid. And I think it's a very important complement for the renewable story, where you have a lot of surplus of renewable in times when you do not have the consumption and you have to put this energy somewhere so that you can transport it forward. Actually, the storage optimizes and make the renewable generation more efficient, because you can have more power accumulated to use the lines and also increase the efficiency of the power transmission grid, right? Because you do not have then subutilized, underutilized at the grid, because you do not have power to transmit. Yeah, I don't see. I think the demand for power transmission is there and will be there forward.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, am I audible?
Yeah,
I'm Dia from White Whale. Just correct me if I've got the stats wrong. If I just look at the NEP plans, there are three components. One was substations, one was transmission lines, and then there's HVDC. There's a significant step up from 22 to 27, and then again a step down in terms of transmission lines and substations. So the data kind of implies that not many additions are going to come in the substations and the transmission lines. The only non-linear growth which was there was in the HVDC part. So in that context, how do you look at the HVDC portfolio in your transmission revenue vertical?
Yeah, we have said this before. So we had a big growth of transmission to last year for this year. And this growth will still be there, but not in the same magnitude, because, you know, this will be more growing in a reasonable number of 3, 4, 5%. And it goes forward because we're expanding the generation anyway. So I don't see that the market will decrease. Actually, it will not grow so big, but we'll keep growing forward. When we look at the HVDC, definitely HVDC is an important element. India is also looking to other portfolio solutions. So this is also a public thing. India is looking at growing the AC lines to 1200 kV. Right, so there are a lot of 765 right now. So at the end of the day, the grid is a combination of several voltage levels and several technologies to suffice the demand. HVDC, we are in the market, as I have said, and we are focused on the VSEC, and for every VSEC that comes up in the market, we will be participating and fighting to win.
Got it.
So this is an important element to us.
Okay, just one last question. Was this ISTS waiver going away? Are you seeing any pullback
on
the ISTS waiver, which is the interstate transmission waiver, which was given? That's been phased out starting, I think, FY28. So do you see any pullback on, you know, interstate transmission capex from here on, just because of this new policy?
Well, I wouldn't see, for the reason that, you know, the demand for electricity will not go down. It will only go up, as I have said. And the waiver is a facilitator or incentive to, you know, to accelerate the renewable implementation. But I think also renewable is becoming so competitive, because these incentives are also not forever. Right? Just, you know, to get traction, and then when you get traction, then you do not need anymore. Respective of incentives or not, the demand for electricity will be there. So then you need generation, you need transmission. So there is no other way. So it's not because of this that the growth of India will not happen. Actually, the growth of India will push the growth of the power sector.
Okay. Then we had one question back there and then one here, and then I think we'll just close it so that we get some time to speak. Yeah, please.
Am I audible?
Yeah, please go ahead.
So good morning. This is Abhijit Singh from Systematics. So first question is, I wanted your view on the sustainability of power demand. So we talked about electrification, we talked about data centers consuming a lot of power. Also, in the emerging economies, there's increased per capita consumption that is happening. So all these factors combined, how do you see the power demand sustaining going forward? I'm sure there will be a period of high growth, but what is the kind of view on the medium to longer term on the power demand?
The demand is absolutely sustainable as long as the economy keeps growing as it's growing, right? The middle class keeps, you know, growing in the income and getting more disposable income to invest and buy things. The industrialization of the country, if I look at India, this cycle should be long as nothing unexpected happens. I'm just put this disclaimer because nobody can say what's going to happen in this world next year, right? So who can say, right? There are wars, there are tariffs, everything can happen nowadays, right? So then we have also to be careful that if nothing comes from the hit you from the side, right? The sustainability of the demand should be forward because this is supported by the fundamentals of the country, right? So energy is not an element in itself. Energy is an enabler for the growth of the country. So if the country is keeping growing as it's growing, and I believe it will grow, and the aspirations of India should come through, as I was in the slide, so the electricity demand will go forward. Yeah, it's sustainable.
And what is our capability and strategy to participate in the Indian nuclear expansion program that has been recently announced? So what is, how are we looking at it, you know, in the medium long term?
The strategy, so in the, as I have said, for the nuclear, our participation is on the steam island. We are not in the reactor side, and we are market leader on the steam, large steam turbines globally. Also in India, as I said, I shared here, most of the fleet of steam turbines in India belongs to our technology. For the next wave of power generation that is nuclear, we will be looking for keeping our participation with the large steam turbines. And we are looking forward for the discussions that are happening right now, how the regulation will be sorted out, right? There are the thing on the private participation, but there are also the topic on the civil liabilities, as you know. And these are very fundamental elements to be solved so that we can participate on a safe way in this market. And if these things are sorted out, as I believe they will, then we will have a play over there. Okay?
Okay. One last question from here.
Thank you. Amit Anwani from PL Capital. First question, sir, on the generation side. Just wanted to understand your outlook on the steam turbine for industrials and gas turbine. The domestic market has been kind of slowed down. The capexes have slowed down. And we can see the growth was only 11% YOY for you in generation. And I'm assuming there would be large service portfolio also in that revenue. So just wanted to understand the outlook, which industries you're getting traction, if at all, and will this be double digit, or there would be improvement in growth, your thoughts on that, yeah.
No, thank you for the question. So in the industrial steam turbines that we do in Vadodara, we see a very different market from power transmission. Power transmission is going through a boom because of renewables and everything. Steam turbines goes more along with the industrial sector development, right? And there we see an average growth from 4 to 6% that goes along with these industries. So there is a consistent demand for steam turbines, and that's why we have a very good load and a very good, you know, stable business over there. The main verticals that we see is basically steam, cement and steel, because, you know, it's expanding infrastructure in this country, as it happened with rails, roads and everything, airports. You need a lot of cement and steel, of course. And then we are applying steam turbines over there before the expansions, but also many customers doing the waste heat recovery, where they have, you know, existing plants, but they wanted to optimize and bring more efficiency with the capture of the flue gases and generation of additional energy. So many turbines come out of there. We also see the pulp and paper expansion, sugar and ethanol had a peak with all the blending that happened, now is lowered down a little bit. If India keeps, you know, with a high ambition on blending more ethanol to the gasoline, then of course you need more mills to produce more ethanol, and then pushes along again the industrial steam turbines. But fundamentally, say metals, cement, sugar and ethanol, pulp and paper.
Second on service buy, is understanding correct that the 20 billion largely coming from the power generation services? And second, are we doing any third party service? How has been the growth in the service business and also the profitability margins in service business? If you can give some color on that.
Want to figure out?
So basically, the service is coming from the generation side predominantly. I think your assumption is correct to that extent. And then it is, of course, on the back of the installed base. So it's more not third party, but more on our installed base where we're getting the service business. And then there are also those additional ones which comes from mods and upgrades as well, which is what Guillermo was referring to, because there are also upgrades on aged fleet as well, which gives us an opportunity to bring in the service component along with the spares, which acts as a kicker for us.
And how has been the profitability here?
I mean, I can't go into the details of the profitability of the segment wise.
Lastly, on the STATCOM and FACTS, you did highlighted that we had a 50% market share and we did want good numbers in F25. So, medium to long term, what is the opportunity on STATCOM and FACTS? How's the market? And will this be a significant contributor to our intakes also, since we are saying that HVDC still might take some time for intake to come there? So just wanted to understand the STATCOM and FACTS part. Is it coming from central utilities, state utilities? And how was the contribution in intake for this year?
STATCOM is an important contributor. You know, because of the renewables, STATCOMs will be demanded. If I'm not wrong with the number from CEA, is around 75 STATCOMs that are in the plan. Last year we had around 10. This year, as per the plan, we should have another 8 to 10, and this should go forward like that. Maybe we can consider 10 per year. So keeping the same success that we had, STATCOM keeps being a very important element to us. Where we have been successful, we have a good technology, we are competitive. So this will be forward a major contributor.
How was the contribution this year in intake from STATCOMs?
So in the total order intake?
Yeah.
These we do not disclose.
Okay.
Because, you know, then goes down to the granularity of the portfolio element.
Sure.
But you can consider that in the transmission space was an important contribution.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think with that, we will just end the Q&A session, please. Just give us sort of 5-10 minutes. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Those of you who have taken out time to come and join us here, and those who have joined us online as well. So with that, we end the meeting today. Thank you very much. You could join us outside now for some more questions if you have, and some tea coffee break as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.